present here this morning, our legal servants from Parliament, Lady Ray, welcome. Everyone, very welcome this morning. Members, let me also welcome back one of our parliamentary staff members, Khadija, who underwent operations. Inshallah, everything is well. And we want to wish you all the best, Khadija, for the future. And inshallah, it went wonderful. Inshallah. also to our Dr. Madlofa, who we believe is also ill, but there's nothing that prayer can't do. And welcome back, Dr. Madlofa. Honorable members, Honorable Diane Kolabana has been taken away from this committee. She has been moved to police. She has been moved back to police. Dr. Fick, as we know, is the shadow minister of the Democratic Alliance for the committee. And I see Ms. Dyer, Honorable Dyer. Ryder, Honorable Ryder, are you replacing Honorable Kolabana? Welcome, Honorable Ryder.
Thank you, Chair.
One thing in this committee, we fight, but we make more love than fight. We are more lovable people than we are fighting people. Ask Dr. Malcolm. The lady says they like that statement, so I don't know. But we are lovable people in the committee. Honorable members, our agenda in front of us is very clear. If I can ask you, I see the first point is adoption of the minutes. Can we move back to the last and deal with the briefing by the Parliamentary Legal Services on the way forward regarding the expropriation bill? The inputs by the House of National, by the National House of Traditional Leaders, we will do that at an opportune time, but we are just dealing with the way forward. The traditional bill has been referred back by the President to the National Assembly, to the Speaker and the National Assembly. And he had some reservations in terms of the constitutional muster of the bill as such. I've then asked the management committee, asked the legal advice, the legal services at Parliament, to just give us a direction because we got some submissions from resource or legal resource center and one other place also that did submissions, but then we asked Parliament's legal service to give us their emphasis on the opinions and on the referral back of the President. There is three issues that the President has touched on, but the main issue is on the Lamosa case that he has touched on the bill. In terms of the Lamosa case, it's got far-reaching implications because the one implication it's got, which the Constitutional Court judgment then said that time with the Lamosa case, was that the fault of one house is the fault of the whole Parliament. And if we joint rules and the Constitution with the referral, then there's a duty on us as the National Assembly Portfolio Committee also to bring everything into perspective. But I'll hand over to our able lady, and I see that we don't have to bill legal services for wasteful expenditure. Thank you for joining us for breakfast and that. I'm handing over to the advocates or to the attorney to take us forward and take us through the process of the referral of the President. We also welcome Honorable Matebe, all the way from Limpopo. Welcome to Rainy Cape Town. You know, someone was saying it was 30 degrees yesterday in Cape Town. And on Sunday, it was also 30 degrees. Then yesterday, this person was saying at the airport, He says, "Ish, you see all the migrant workers going back to Cape Town now from Parliament. Now Parliament is going to start raining. Cape Town is going to start raining again because they are bringing their blessings from the other provinces. Thank you, Honourable Matebe, for bringing the blessings for the rain of Cape Town from Limpopo. Jalibu, welcome. Over to you, ma'am."
Thank you so much, Chair.
Sorry, ma'am. Honourable members, that is Honourable. Don't you want to introduce yourself, Honourable Pat?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Dennis Ryder. I'm from Gauteng, just south of Johannesburg is a municipality called Midvaal. That is where I've started my history, and I'm very pleased to be part of this committee, and I thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. Honourable Ryder has joined the committee in the place of Honourable Diane Kolabana from the Democratic Alliance. And welcome, Honourable Ryder, and we wish for a fruitful and hopeful working experience forward. And that's Honourable Fick is like a household name in the committee. He's recently joined us, but he's so part of the furniture already that we don't have to welcome him anymore. He's already welcome, Dr. Fick. Over to you.
Thanks once again, Chairperson. My name is Phumelele Ngema from Legal Services here in Parliament. I'm basically going to try and outline as clear as possible the process that the Constitution as well as our rules has given us in order to direct this process that the committee is engaging in. First of all, we are dealing with the expropriation bill, B4D of 2015. Moving forward from now on, that is the bill that is before the committee, and that is the bill that has been remitted by the President back to Parliament. All the other versions of the bill have no place anymore in this instance. And Bill 4D of 2015 is the bill that was ready for assent, but the President had constitutional reservations, and for the reservations that he has outlined in his letter, he did not then sign the bill into law and instead returned back to the national legislature. And that is our starting point. Now, moving forward, after the committee had received the referral letter from the speaker, which instituted the proceedings that this bill must now be reconsidered, taking into account exactly what the president indicates as his reservations. The bill has been referred back in terms of Section 79 of the Constitution. Section 79 of the Constitution outlines the process as to what should take place once the President has said, "I have constitutional problems with the bill that you have sent to me." In terms of Section 79, if you look through all those provisions, it then dictates that the process and everything that may take place in respect of a reconsideration of a remitted bill, it must be outlined in the rules of Parliament. And in this instance, the rules of Parliament that are relevant are the joint rules, the Brown Book. The joint rules from Rule 203 up to 212, if I'm not mistaken, I think are the relevant, specific and direct provisions that will guide this process moving forward. The rules are basically under Rule 203 indicating that when the committee has received a remitted bill, it must contain itself to the reservations of the President. Now, where do we get the reservations of the President? We get the reservations of the President from the letter that he writes to the Speaker to outline what are his issues, what are his constitutional issues. In such an instance, as we know that the processing, the legislative processing of bills can either be done in terms of Section 76, 75, or 77 if it is a minor bill. In this instance, your bill is a Section 76 bill, which means more power and more input expected from the National House, from the National Council of Provinces, as well as extensive engagement of the provincial legislatures, taking into account the submissions and the influence and the input from the whole country. Now, looking at the letter that the president has sent to refer this bill back, he has based most of his reservations on public participation. He says he has a concern with the manner the legislative process of this bill was conducted. In the second paragraph of his letter, if I'm not mistaken, he expressed directly that he might really have concerns with the process of the NCOP when this was when this bill was before the NCOP. There are no further details as to that. However, if you look further into his letter, he has then quoted specific paragraphs from the judgment of La Mosa, which was before the Constitutional Court. I will not get into details of that judgment, but in the opinion that we have prepared, those specific paragraphs that the President referred to, I have incorporated them into the opinion for your ease of reference. Basically, what the President is saying, if we were to summarize his reservation, I have a concern with public participation. And what does public participation mean? There is no definite explanation as to what public participation means. That is, the Constitution does not expressly define public participation, but we are not in the dark, because our court has given us direction to interpret what public interpretation is, I mean public participation is. There are articles from experts who have also written on this similar subject. What basically public participation in a nutshell means is that every legislature, national, provincial, even a local government, there must be meaningful engagement with the public. So your ears as the legislature must be open to what the public is saying. The submissions that they make, either in public hearings or in presentations that are written, they must, to some degree, have an influence to the decision that you eventually make, which means every public submission must be considered, be given an ear, and then you take a resolution as to the direction that you take once you have heard everything as the representative of the nation. So what has happened in this instance, as I've said, the president has basically said, I have an issue with public participation. Public participation is a constitutional obligation. It comes from specific provisions of the Constitution, where the Constitution requires that the National Assembly, the National Council of Provinces, as Parliament, must engage and facilitate public participation in the legislative process where they are dealing with putting a law into place. The joint rules of Parliament, as I said, from Rule 203 to Rule 212, they allow Parliament to look at the reservations of the President and then take a stand. It is Parliament that decides whether the reservations of the President are procedural or are substantial in nature. There is a rule that speaks to procedural defects. If I may quickly just make an example to illustrate what a procedural defect would be so that you are clear moving forward. For an example, if Section 65 has to be invoked at the NCOP, there are specific numbers of the delegates and the kind of delegates that must be there to vote to pass that specific bill before the NCOP. And if that provision is not complied with, that is a procedural defect. Because when the National Council of Provinces as a House went to sit in their plenary, there was either a sufficient number of the quorum to pass that specific bill. That is a procedural defect. Our rules then go further to speak to substantial defects. Substantial defects would be where the President, for an example, says, clause 15 of the expropriation bill, I'm not happy with it because of ABCD. And constitutionally, it will be flawed because of ABCD. That would be a substantial defect, which means that specific content, and if we are to contain the reservations of the President, if he has made reference to a specific clause, then you must retain yourself to dealing, taking consideration or reconsideration of only clause 15. But in this instance, if we look at the letter of the president, for the lack of a better phrase, he has thrown the sink and the baby back to parliament, saying public participation does not satisfy me the way that I've understood and the way that I've received submission. And therefore, I'm saying, please reconsider this bill and take a step. In terms of Section 79 and in terms of the rules that I've referred to, the President has returned the bill back to Parliament on the basis of both a procedural defect and a substantial defect. How does it become a substantial defect? It becomes a substantial defect because you cannot go to the public and expect input from them on the content of the bill without opening the bill. The President is basically saying, what is public participation? Public participation is getting the public to engage with you on the way they think and the way they see things and the way things are practically done. And then they're giving you, say, this is the information we have. Whatever you do with the information, it is up to you. Hence, in the instance of the expropriation bill, it is impossible to separate the substance of the bill and the procedural aspects of the bill. Hence, I'm saying to you, the way that the President decided to couch his letter, it is opening the bill in its substance and opening the bill in its procedural aspects. The procedural aspects are coming from Section 76, as I indicated, this is a Section 76 bill. Now, moving forward, once each process has to retake, has to be reconsidered and take place again, it is not necessarily that we must again have an enabling provision that expresses how to go about. In this instance, it was a Section 76 bill. So the process that is outlined in Section 76 will kick off again, depending on the resolution that this committee will take to say, this is our position. We are happy that the President is saying there's a procedural defect and a substantial defect. Then moving forward, this is the way we will do this. But the resolution and the way this is going to be done, it is entirely upon this committee. And once this committee has taken its report and decided how it's going to reconsider the bill, then that report must be taken to the House for their approval. And once that is done, again, the processes of the NCOP must then kick in. So, one question that arises when one thinks of this is then, how then do we go about? My advice would be Section 76 is the guideline as to how this process will take place. And then, if it was a clear process that the President has specifically said, I have the reservations with 1, 2, 3, then we would contain ourselves to those specific provisions. But in this instance, he did not. Instead, he added, just as a by the way, that in fact, looking at the content of the bill, I am also worried that possibly, because there's an issue of communal land, and communal land, our courts have already indicated, it is under the traditional leadership. And traditional leadership has been recognized and is accepted in our country. They have a place and a role to play. Hence, there's Section 18 of the Traditional Leadership Framework Act. And Section 18 is a compulsory requirement that Parliament must engage in should the bill pertains to customs or customary law, or it will impact on the manner that customary law is applied. In that instance, then I understand that the committee, upon receiving the reservations of the President from the Speaker, they already sent a request to the National House of Traditional Leaders to indicate that there is a referral of the President in this instance, and these are the comments or the observations that the President has. If we look at the comments that have already come from the National House of Traditional Leaders, in fact, it is clear there is no other way that the substance of the bill cannot be opened up by this process of reconsideration. If you look at their comments, even though they touch on specific provisions, but clearly there was no indication that you must only look at clause 1 and clause 5 and clause 10, but they looked at what from their side is affecting them, and they brought an input, which now is an input before you. That is a good example to say, this is a bill which brings all together both the provisions on procedural defect and the provisions on substantial defect. Now that is where the committee is at. And having said all that and being guided by all those provisions that I've referred to, it is not for us to take a view or a direction as to how then the committee can go about in this process. It is solely a decision of the committee, because the constitution and the rules enable the committee and parliament to dictate how it runs its business. Hence, as my concluding remarks, this is a decision that needs to be taken very cautiously. A decision on whether the committee agrees that this is a bill that has procedural defects as well as substantial defects. And if they take, and if as the committee will take that stand, you then have to deliberate and decide how to go about. But it is a very, very crucial and a decision that needs to be taken cautiously for the implication that it has, both legally speaking, constitutionally, and procedurally. I think.
Thank you, ma'am. Honourable members, if you look has everyone got the document? You've all got that, yeah? If Honourable Satori's got it, then I know everyone's got it. Thank you, Baba Satori. If I look at the advice on page 4, and in terms of the LAMSA case as such, and the referral letter of the President, it does not specify which House of Parliament failed to conduct public involvement that satisfies the Constitution obligation. So, and of the LAMSA case, either House of Parliament could have fallen short in terms of the referral letter. So I want to express the view, members, that we take the briefing from the legal advice this morning. If there's any questions from the members to the legal advice on the procedural aspect of the bill, and as a committee, we will then have to deal with the process, procedural aspect of the process going forward, possibly at an opportune time, but not today, because we haven't made provision in our schedule of meetings for today or for this term, but preferably look at it coming back next term on our way forward and in our process forward, how we will have to deal with the bill. I know that in some instances where we've got the submissions specifically from the Legal Resources Center, is that we could not tamper with the bill, could not do anything with the bill. That is not the understanding, ma'am, that I've got. The understanding on the President's reservation is that if we have to go for public participation, whatever comes in needs to be factored into the bill as such. So I would suggest, but I would, that the process in actual fact, how we're going to go about it, we will have done it at an opportune time in the next term, when we come back the next quarter, because we haven't got the space and the time now for doing that. Honourable Satori, questions is only reflected onto what the legal advice has given us. Honourable Satori, Dr. Fick, Honourable Adams, and Honourable I've seen you for so long time that I forgot Professor Professor Sultan and Dr. Madoff after that. Honourable Satori?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. And Chairperson, I'm trying to understand the reservation of the President, because we don't have a letter. We don't know then when the presenter says there's no meaning, there's no condition of public participation, if I understand what she said, what does that mean when he says there's no meaning, there's no condition of public participation? The last one, I'm trying to understand between the submissions and the participation, because I was in this room. I know what the process said, the procedure that we follow until this bill was sent to Parliament and to NCOP. It came back to us for some reservation from the president to deal with this one. So now I'm trying to find out what the difference is now.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Obviously, my input is limited because of the fact that I was not here when the bill was tabled here. But just issues that I would like to get clarification on is, firstly, if there is uncertainty as to who made the error, why then is the bill here? Why did it not go to the other house? That's my one question. My second question is, with regards to whether it's relevant now or not, is whether the actual content of the bill, if there was an issue with that, if it was considered. And then lastly, it might be just maybe there is a signed copy, but I noticed that this letter is unsigned and it's presented without a date even. So just an issue that I would like to understand why. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Let me take the route. Honourable Matlosa.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Thanks to the presenter. I think Honourable Sole has raised one of the questions that I was concerned with. I see the legal interpretation of the letter from the president. But it would be good for us as members just to see and have also our own interpretation compared to the one of the legal. I think really we need that one so that we are empowered to really engage with informed position. Secondly, Chair, I want to check here, Chair, that on the interpretation of the legal person saying that the president had a concern on public participation as well as the concern with the process of NCOP. Does it mean to say that on the National Assembly side there is no concern by the president? I'm asking that because there is no letter to see, only the concern on the NCOP process, because they also involve the services and so on. Otherwise, there is no problem with the National Assembly, as the colleague is saying that they're part of the process. And also, on the way forward from that letter from the president and the Lamsa judgment, the process going forward, you are advising us that we must follow 76, section 76 going forward, meaning to say that it starts from the press and then following the process going forward. Am I understanding you correctly when you're saying that? Thanks.
Thank you
very much, thank the presenter for the presentation that she's made. Yes, I think I will join the other members that we definitely need to get that copy of the letter from the president so that we also understand it. And also, if you could have the copies of the judgments that she's been quoting, that this is what happened, so that you can also have those copies ourselves and have an understanding of them. I think what the president is talking about public participation, even if I haven't seen the letter, it might be the fact that when we're dealing this bill, we did not go out to the communities, but we we invited the organizations to come to Parliament, and they made their input into the bill, and we used those. In fact, they did impact in our bill, because they were here, then we took their input and used them. But maybe we lacked from the effect that we did not go out to the communities and get what the public is saying as far as the bill is concerned. That's my understanding. Thank you.
Honourable Adams.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the presenter. Chairperson, we have a government of three spheres, being from local, provincial, and national. And the presenter made an interesting point when she said that even a local government can do consultations. Now, I assume that the National House of Traditional Leaders did that consultation. With regard to that, can we take the input of the National House of Traditional Leaders as public participation? And you know, the term public participation is a very wide term. I would like to foreshadow, Chair, that we have a workshop as a committee on that letter, so that we have a common understanding from the President, and that we have this legal judgment that was made that could affect this bill. That when we go and debate, we have a common understanding of what the judgment said with regard to public participation. That's the first one. Then, Chairperson, I don't know how the programming of this committee was. The reason I'm saying this, next week we are going on oversight, and the very next week we are in our PCOs. And only after then we come back. You know, we had this bill a few months ago. If I can't remember anything, I touch here and I touch there. I would have loved us to have postponed this meeting for when we start in October, but it can't be. And that this resuming work of engaging with the legal persons, and that should have been done by the chair and the work, so that we only have the chair. And Chairperson, I think she said the Lamosa. I wrote down something like Lamosa. Whatever it is, must come and engage us with that. Then Chairperson, this is a very, very important bill that could affect people everywhere. And when we do this bill, we should reach far beyond party politics. And that's why I said, Chairperson, we must have a workshop that give us the baseline, so that we can go out to our people, and we all want to serve our people, that we serve our people in the best way that we can, so that we can bring electricity, water, and everything to everybody, and especially to the women in the rural areas, so that their being there could be better. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of points here. Just for the sake of emphasis, I'll reiterate the point that wanted to have an access to the letter from the president. Coming to the concept of public participation, our legal guru refers to meaningful engagement with the public. And I read that with another statement, which is adequate public participation. I think as a committee we need to have a common, thorough understanding of exactly what is required, you know, by the Constitution, so to speak, in order to ensure that we comply, you know, to the letter and spirit of these two statements. And to that extent, therefore, I want to align myself with the statement made by my colleague to the fact that we need to ask ourselves as to whether we actually complied with that. Did we conduct sufficient public participation by merely inviting certain institutions down to Cape Town? The next point is that what about Sploma? Now, I'm raising this issue of Sploma in relation to the fact that our legal advisor says that commonage land is actually under the jurisdiction. I'm not quoting the exact words when I say jurisdiction. We could be saying management or control of traditional leaders, but that's the whole concept. Now, Sploma, on the other hand, gives less powers or authority, if you like, to traditional leaders. When it comes to Sploma is the act that was passed in 2013, enabling local municipalities to take more meaningful control of that process of planning for land use, you know. Now, can you give us your take on which of these two acts? You mentioned, I think you said communal land act, something like that. I don't know if I quoted you correctly. But apparently there is an act that you are referring to, which you said is to the effect that traditional leaders have got control over, you know, commonage land. And I'm saying, on the other hand, this house has passed Sploma. Now, which is which? Who is actually in control of communal land? Is it municipalities according to Sploma, or is it traditional leaders? Now, I'm bringing this up again because Honorable Adams has referred, you know, by way of, you know, reminding us to the fact that there is a need for us to actually approach local government better. I know that SALGA made a presentation, but SALGA is a top structure. And if we're talking about a Section 76 bill, I think we need to drill deeper and not just deal with SALGA, which is a national organization. I think we need to drill deeper and actually make a local government where they are feel that they are being consulted. I'm afraid, Chair, I may be spilling over now to issue of procedure, but I'm using that just to drive the point, you know, here. So we might have to consider that, and I'm saying it, Chair, so that in her response, she can then say, there's Pluma designed, and then there is this other act on the one hand. The real people that we really need to sit down with as part of our public participation process is the traditional leaders, or is it, local government? Much as one knows that in local government, traditional leaders, you know, also sit there. My initial question that I had silently when you started presentation was, do they have a local standing as an institution? As an institution. What if someone who comes from some rural area raises a point which is contrary to what the House of Traditional Leaders are saying? Whose point will outweigh the other? Do they have a local standing in this matter as an institution overriding the views of the common people? And I think we need to deal with that because currently that has become a hot issue in the Committee of Rural Development, where I also serve. with the acts, with the bills that we have been, you know, dealing with, conducting public participation in the better part of August communal poverty associations. They complain a lot about the traditional leaders. So whose view do we take? Which one will outweigh? So we need to go into that element as well going forward. Thanks for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you, members. I must have allowed you because the process is that the legal advisor will brief us on the way going forward and what their parliament's legal perspective is on this vote. As I've said previously, the other processes we will have to deal with when we come back here. Honourable Adams, the program has been set out by the National Assembly Program Committee, not by us as a MANCOM or as a committee. We have to follow the National Assembly Program Committee. In terms of that, they then decide when is oversight week, when is constituency week, so when is that. So when we come back after the constituency period, after the BRRR, we're going to do the BRRR 3 to 13 of October, then we'll have to deal with this. But my thinking is that we won't finish that now, this term, or before the end of the year. We'll probably have to ask the House Chairpersons that we spill over into the next two terms of 2018 to deal with this bill. Because, members, the fact of the matter is, we have only as a committee, I know where Honorable Story comes from, but the bill has then lapsed because there was a general election when the bill was dealt with in 2008. So this is a fresh new type of bill that we have started in the process. Now, as the Portfolio Committee, we have only invited the organized labors or the organized people that were here that came and make a representation. Nothing has stopped the committee to go out and do the public participation process as the Rural Development and Land Reform has done, as COCTA has done, and as some other committees has done. So I think that, but we'll deal with that process when we come back afterwards. It was just to get the briefing from the legal person, which we want to say thank you, ma'am. And there is some questions that you want to answer. But I think before we then do, and we start with that, members, that we then have a workshop, because we also need the state law advisors' perspective, and the department has also come in here, so that we have this whole process. Because public participation, it's contained in the Joint Rules of Parliament, but it's also contained in the Constitution, where it says that 59, public access to and involvement in National Assembly matters, or in National Assembly. And it says that the National Assembly must facilitate public involvement in the legislative and other processes of the Assembly and its committees. So that is the view of the public participation. That's my view. Or how do the legal people say it? That's the emphasis that I put on in terms of the public participation.
Chair, before the legal advice, if you allow me just to say a few words. Thanks very much. Just some background to the President's letter to the National Assembly, to Parliament. Yeah, sure. Okay, so that's, I can't get away with it.
Thank you.
Okay. So, essentially, in our view, certainly as the department, there was an extremely thorough process that occurred in the National Assembly through the Portfolio Committee. In fact, it was kind of tediously long, to be quite honest. I think we went through it. It's true that we only, I think, had 3 days of public hearings, but we also had a huge pile of public submissions, and so the public hearings were selected from the public submissions that we got. I think there were over 50 submissions, which is I've been involved in quite a lot of legislation as a parliamentarian, as a chair of committees and so forth, and I think that at the portfolio committee level, the process, I mean, you know, how long is a string, kind of piece of string? We can't consult 55 million South Africans in any process. So, as the parliamentary legal advisor said, one must take seriously our public participation requirements, but it's a deliberately vaguely defined. You won't find a quantitative definition anywhere in the rules of parliament, I assume, and so on, because it's impossible. Okay, so we had a pretty thorough process here. Then it went to the select committee of the NCOP, and I think we failed from our side in Public Works in not sufficiently advising the NCOP about the complexities of the bill and the challenges, therefore, of processing it effectively in the NCOP. So this was last year, and the NCOP, well, Parliament in general, was rushing towards shutting down ahead of the August local government election. Okay, let's all be honest about that. And so it was not a satisfactory process at the NCOP level. Okay, and indeed the DA, and particularly in the select committee, raised some technical issues around late submissions of reports from a couple of the provinces, at least one province. Our team from DPW, as they had serviced the portfolio committee hearings, we also serviced the select committee and their provincial hearings that they held. But often there were five in different provinces simultaneously on the same day, and we had a limited team, and there are not many other people technically on top of the bill to be able to facilitate public participation. So in our considered view, the process was never going to be a full public participation. We just need to be realistic about that, but it had serious shortcomings. And therefore, we and the DA had promised to raise the matter specifically in this around the NCOP process. Okay, so then the bill came back to us, as the Honourable Sotoli remembers, with a minor, it was like, to be quite honest, the NCOP putting its little stamp on the process, and they changed two words or something like that. And we agreed to that. So we went back to the National Assembly, and it went through. Some of the parties objected, but nonetheless it was passed in the National Assembly for a second time. It then went, obviously, for the President's assent. The President received two objections, the one from the Institute of Race Relations, as I remember, and I think the substantive one was from the Institute of Race Relations.
Couple of others.
And there were a couple of others, but essentially, and clearly in our guess, and we saw that in our hearings, well, the couple of others were basically animated by the Institute of Race, because they were saying essentially the same thing. Okay, and the Institute of Race Relations was raising, and we've got the full documentation, and might be of interest to members when we have a workshop, because I think that would be a good idea when we have the time, just to kind of reflect on it all properly. But essentially, as I recall, the Institute of Race Relations raised the procedural issues, specifically in the NCOP, and not as I recall, in the Portfolio Committee at all. Okay. And then secondly, also, being the Institute, okay, let me not be political, but I'm tempted to be political. The Institute of Race Relations also raised deep concern about traditional leaders. Okay. And you can detect a degree of irony in my voice, but you can ignore it if you want to. Okay. So the President then wrote, as he would be required to say, he spent some time reflecting on these matters, and then wrote, as would be the normal thing, to both the chairperson of the NCOP and to the Speaker of Parliament, and said, I've received these concerns. what is your response to it? And the response from both the chair and the speaker was that while they noted the issues that had been raised, in their view, there was no problem, that the process was fine. So both the speaker and the chairperson said that. The letter of the president to the speaker and the chairperson was CC'd to the Minister of Public Works, okay, which then gave us the opportunity to see what had happened. And our concern was exactly the Lancer concern that, and as the parliamentary legal advisor said, on the procedural issue, well, generally when there's an issue, one needs to, the danger is that you rush something, and then you, in the interest of passing an important piece of legislation, and then you end up in the next 5 years in the courts and the constitutional courts and so on. And that's exactly what happens with the Lancer matter. So we advised, our minister was then, at that stage, the previous Minister of Public Works, said, thank you for CCing to the president. We share a concern, not all the concerns raised by the Institute of Regulation, but we do share concern around the processes which in our view were rushed and inadequate and therefore vulnerable to constitutional challenge, that it happened in the NCOP. Okay, so we wrote that letter. And so from the ministry in DPW, we claim some responsibility for the predicament we've now got all of ourselves into. But we think it was the correct advice. So the president has come back with the letter, which unfortunately we haven't distributed, but it would be addressed to the National Assembly because the process then begins here. Okay. So without going into the further discussion that we need to have, and I agree with you that we need to do that, just to make several points. Right at the beginning, okay, when the bill was first introduced, and tagged as a Section 76. One of the issues specifically that the state law advisors indicated was that there was no need to consult with the National House of Traditional Leaders, because specifically in the legislation, in the Constitution, basically consultation with them, taking it through the National House of Traditional Leaders, is required when traditional law, customary law, is impacted upon, and there's no impact on. There's impact on communal land tenure, clearly, when it comes to expropriation and how one manages an expropriation. But we are not we're not changing through this bill any bit of customary law. Okay. Nonetheless, the president, and I think correctly, said there's no harm in at least, and already that has happened. So. When we get back to it, in some form, as Parliament, as NCFP and anything, as the Parliamentary Law Advisors said, there have been comments coming from the House. I think that you went and presented to the House,
yes,
to the National House, some weeks back. And as a result of that interaction, there's now, I've not seen what they've responded, they've raised numbers of issues. So presumably one of the things that we would need to look at would be what they've raised, and to satisfy our minds that, we do need to reconsider the substance of the bill in terms of what they're raising, or there's no need, that's misunderstood, and so on. So that we would need to look at that, okay. So I think that base is covered, provided we cover it, if my understanding is correct. That you've interacted with the National Arts Chair, and they've made comments, and those comments now are in play into the parliamentary process. Would that be a correct understanding? I'm also looking at the... Would that be a correct understanding? That the comments that have come from them, there's no need now to go back again, but their comments are in play in the parliamentary process. Okay. Now, the colleagues who were active in the process, and most of you were, apart from our CA colleagues, will know it's a complicated piece of legislation. It took us all, including the Deputy Minister, each time we went through it about five times eventually, clause by clause, line by line and so forth. And, you know, on the fourth go, I was still discovering new things or realizing what I'd said on the third go was not quite accurate. And so I said, complicated. Okay. So I think that we need to be, without now going into the process issues, we need to be realistic about what is possible. We need to be cautious, as your word is, I think, advised. We don't want to rush it again and then end up back again where we are. We need to, and we've done a lot of good work. I mean, in my view, I think that the work done by the portfolio committee, I think, was good work. So it's not as though there's a useless, you know, the issues which different political parties still have issues with, I'm sure they will continue to raise these issues, but fundamentally, and I think all of us said, was a good process that we had here, and we've got a good product, which no doubt could be improved and so on. So it's not like it's going back to zero. It mustn't be like demoralized. Now, I think it's going to be a challenge. How do we service? So yes, we could go to municipalities and so on, but really, you know, I think how do we So I heard you informally saying to me that maybe some thought, and we'd need also advice as to whether we combine forces in some form across the two committees, as well as with the provincial legislature, so that we can also service those in an effective way. So that when it came to the NCRP, we missed all of you, okay? Because you've now developed a knowledge and an understanding of the thing, and we had to start again, and we only had a couple of days in this. And we couldn't then deploy the members of the select committee into their provincial legislature, so they weren't at all on top of the legislation, the detail. So we provided them with PowerPoints and all kinds of things. But you all know from your experience, it was not easy. So sorry, I'm going on too long, but that's my final word. In short, I think let's not be downhearted about it. Let's take the advice, as we must in any case, of the parliamentary and good advice and useful advice. That we proceed in good order, and therefore maybe if we set aside, next year, earliest next year, which might be, because I think I suspect we're going to have a disrupt, a short for all kinds of reasons. So, and let's get our act together, and hopefully if we can, I don't know, your informal suggestion that I heard making, if we can somehow, so that we can also bring our pool of experts to play so that they can be present in provincial hearings and things like that and facilitate the public participation. Otherwise, it just goes off in a million directions. But thanks very much. Sorry, thanks for the opportunity of giving some background, hopefully. It would be nice also to talk to the opposition parties as well, informally, just also so that we have a chance also to just to think about the politics of the issue, which inevitably comes into the space. I'm looking particularly at the IFP and the DA and our colleague from UDM. That's not to say I'm not going to have a discussion with the ANC colleagues as well. Of course, I will do that. But I think it's important that we don't fumble badly. A committee that has done a lot of good work, actually, on this. Thanks, Jim.
I'm just wondering whether you should wait for the Obama case to follow to finish before you can speak.
No. We're unaffected by it. Let's not get into that.
Ma'am, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just quickly, without taking anything away from what the questions have just indicated, just quickly to answer on the questions that were raised, Chairperson. The letter, and if we have time from the President, we'll quickly read through it. But it was HCC'd and put on the HCC for when it was referred for February 2017. It is quite, as I said, it is quite a letter that if you read it paragraph for paragraph, it explains all the issues that the members had raised and as well as the lack of clarity in terms of public participation and how we understand it and what are the basic requirements that we need to have complied with. Just quickly, Chairperson, to take through the questions that were asked and to provide precise answers. So, Chairperson, as I indicated, I had a lot of conflicts today and I'm receiving calls from the other committees as we speak. The first question, Chairperson, which I think I need to quickly deal with, is the question as to why the opinion is not signed. I did indicate to the committee secretary, Chairperson, that we on Friday, because our management in the office had to be out of the office, and now we are signing through the head of the office. So that is why, because by Friday I had to provide the copy as the chair, the committee secretary had indicated. So that is why we have an unsigned copy before the members, but the signed copy has been sorted out. So it is an official and
Members, we have received the signed copy this morning.
We believe it.
So we will deliver the signed copy, as the deputy minister said, not guilty. Thank you very much, and extra thanks.
And then, Chairperson, as I said, most of the questions, they did arise because members did not have a proper insight into the letter. But once we look through it, they will see as to why we have advised in the manner that we have advised, and as to why we are arguing that the manner that the president chose to phrase his letter was very brilliant, and basically to say, considering that I had already sent another letter and indicated that the processes of the NCOP were not sufficiently good, I am now giving you details. But then again, the details that I give you, you have to read in between the lines.
Okay, I'm just going to interrupt. The brilliance that she attributes to the president is that he borrowed basically from the DPW letter of the minister, which was written by...
and on to the issue of trying to put together a workshop to put a better understanding about public participation together as the department and everybody involved, it should be done, and I'm sure, Chairperson, following your program and your direction, we can definitely provide that and bring into the understanding of the committee all the judgments that are related and try to make a summary that will direct the members to exactly what is required of them. So that can definitely be done, and we undertake to be part of that as well. On the question of whether the inputs from the NHTL are sufficient public participation, the answer is a resounding no. Why do I say that, Chairperson? Because I concur with the Deputy Minister that if you look at the whole content of the bill, it has nothing to do with customer law. But it may, in some way, just touch on certain other things, but it is not repealing, changing, or amending in any way what is done customarily and how customary law works. And as the President, I said, he noted that point as a by the way. He said, and on the basis that there is an issue, that communal land may fall onto the land that may have to be expropriated. So it doesn't per se say there is anything that has to do with customary law or customs of the people in line with what Section 18 requires. But Section 18, I think, was just, in order to contain the process, was then used so that it be the Secretary of Parliament, after the bill is remitted, who sends the referral to the National House of Traditional Leaders. But not to say that once we have had comments from the National House of Traditional Leaders, that is sufficient to cover public participation and to cover the concerns of the President. Definitely not. And in terms of how then the committee is going to reconsider and reopen the process, it is, as I said, solely on the discretion of the committee, taking into account what transpired previously and where the committee and how far it went. As I said, fortunately, the way that the rules and the constitution is couched or is framed, it enables Parliament to dictate, and that is what the constitutional judgments have also said. It enables Parliament to dictate, considering the peculiar circumstances that only Parliament would know. It enables them to dictate what and how is best to do. Coming back to the question of the legislation or the laws that I referred to, basically on that question, I was referring to the judgment, not necessarily the specific legislation like special planning laws and Communal Land Act and all that. It was the judgment, but those judgments were speaking to specific bills and specific laws and how they were handled. But we are only taking the direction and the lessons that we can take from those and compare them and take them to the system and say how can it direct us and give a better way to move forward. So in terms of just giving a straight answer into the question, one of those judgments did indicate that yes, from the way things are still done, communal land still involves traditional leaders and the way that things are done. But it is not to say, because if you go back to policy and all the other laws that relate to making provision and giving direction as to what is the extent and the role of traditional leaders. Traditional leaders are given an influential advisory role to the government. So there is no provision in the Constitution that says once you have consulted with the National House of Traditional Leaders, that suffice to say you've consulted rural and communal-led people. People must still be heard. Because if I were to make a position, I would basically say the institution as such, the National House of Traditional Leaders, it does not enjoy a better position as opposed to any other NGO, if I may put it that way. When the legislative process calls for public submission, everybody is given a chance to say they can input, they can influence Parliament, and anybody and anyone can do that. But in terms of Section 18 of the Traditional Leadership Framework, so long as whatever law you want to put in place, it pertains or it relates or it changes or it speaks to customary law or custom, then that is when there is a leader compliance. And as we have already said, I know as well I was not part of this process because my ex-colleague was taking me through and advising, but she has left Parliament and that is why I've been asked to take through. I've had a briefing with her and I've also having some engagement with Advocate Hoon from the State Law Advisors who's dealing with it. So a little bit of input onto what has transpired in the past, I have some information on it, even though it may not be as well versed as the people that were part of the process. But Chairperson, indeed, providing the advice, I did take into consideration all that has taken place, and as I indicate, so basically what is required in terms of making sure that there is complete compliance with the obligation as set out in Section 59 and I think 72 for the NCOP as to how Parliament facilitates public engagement. That is entirely on the committee. And then again, we cannot take away what has already taken place and all those processes because, as I said, there are financial implications. There's a lot more that needs to be taken into consideration. So my advice does not say that what transpired before the portfolio committee before does not suffice to amount to public participation. That is definitely not what we are saying. And I don't think that is also what the president has said in his referral. And just as much as I'm saying, if you look at paragraph 2 of his letter, that may be read to say maybe he suggests that only the NCOP. And as the chairperson has pointed out, the Namosa judgment says a failure of one house can be attributed to the other house because Parliament is Parliament. But if you read the president's letter, he takes away what he has said in paragraph 2, which basically reads as follows. Subsequent to the referral of the bill to me, I received a number of submissions objecting to the signing of the bill into law. The submissions raised a number of issues, and this is the crucial part. What I found concerning, however, was the assertion that no proper consultation was done by the National Council of Provinces and the provincial legislatures before the bill was passed. You need to read his letter in its entirety. And if you read the judgment, Lamosa, as I said, the standing out finding of the court is that which says, a failure of one house is a failure of the whole parliament. And that does not say in this instance the president is saying, I'm actually satisfied with transpired in the National Assembly. We do not know. He didn't express it. I am trusting, Chairperson, I tried to cover all the questions, but basically the the minute ones and the specific ones on public participation, as I said, the letter of the president will answer all of them. And the workshop, as has been indicated, will fully and comprehensively put forward the proper direction.
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Madota.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair, for the explanation. I want to propose, Chair, that the workshop also includes the NCC committee so that we can be together as a deputy minister was indicating that we did not brief them on how this deal is crucial. So I think we must, in the same house, have the workshop so that we give clarity, so that when they kick up on their job, they know exactly what to do.
No, you're right there, and I agree with you. But I would also like to throw the net wider to say let's include also the legislators and local government into this workshop so that we all go out with one understanding. So when we start the process of the public participation process, that everyone knows that we are on the same level, on the same page, because as much as the president has in his letter put the reservation through that it's the NCOP, but the Lamusa judgment, but also the other judgment now with the secret ballot, where the court has said that parliament, and also it was with the judgment of where the chief justice, I think the one with the president, the Uganda one, where it says that parliament did not do a proper oversight function. So we need to read that all in together, in totality. But we will work out the process, honorable members, and we will write to the House Chairperson to ask permission so that we can have this workshop, but also get Parliament's legal people, the state law advisors, department legal people in there, see that they have written so much nice emphasis or things to the president, that and us, that with the NCOP, with the legislatures, and also get local government. If needs be, also get some members of the National House of Traditional Leaders into the workshop, although they've already given us the recommendations and that, so that we then can take this process forward. Thank you very much, ma'am, for the time. We have kept you here longer than was supposed to be, but it's wonderful, and thank you very much for your time. Members, we now move to the second part of our program. The consideration and adoption of the oversight report visit, which were recently undertaken to the small harbors of the Western Cape, that is the 19th and 21st June, and 30th to 3 August 2017. Now remember, we
Chair, if you can excuse us as well.
Deputy Minister, thank you very much.
No, thank you.
And the department and the legal groups of the department and departmental team. Sorry, the apology, honourable members, we have forgotten to read the apology. The minister has gone for procedure in the hospital. Hospital.
From China, though.
Oh, Baba Buddha.
But it's unconnected.
It's unconnected.
But it's true, he's had a...
That is unconnected, Baba Bhutani.
A knee operation, basically, and will be all correct for a couple of weeks.
Oh, okay. Who's acting?
I'm not sure. I know who it was, but I'm not sure.
When
the minister was in China, it was the minister of the
But we will communicate with you, dear.
Let's go.
We will communicate with you, Deputy Minister. We will communicate.
This is
Members, let's take a 5 minute body break. And those of you that want to get some tea, let's get some tea quickly. And those of you that want to use the bathroom, please. And Ola was over 50. I heard now it's about 7 minutes.
Thank you.
The ANC has got the drawing power. You want to follow the lead now, Floyd Shivambu.
What is that?
Huh?
What has been that?
Of marrying into the ANC.
What is me a convenient? I mean, who would in their right mind join the ANC at this time? I mean,
well, we're not saying that.
Right,
we're not saying joining. I see both of you are quoting the ANC member there, so that's why.
Yeah, I've got to get them too.
The names of the there's a second version that I produced. That one we must leave until another time, because we need a second version.
Yeah, we don't have documents.
Nothing irrelevant. Can always bring in something was remotely related and make it a point of focus. That's what I have to skill.
Honourable members, Taken the 9th, 19th to 21 June and 30th to 3rd August.
Picked up a mistake already on the first heading. 30 to 3 July. 30 July to 3 July. Members, the report has been circulated to you, and we have asked you to do your inputs on the report. So can we start with report one, please? Don't spend the whole day locked up in this room, as we saw the plenary, at 2 o'clock.
So, just a question for clarity. We are not going to deal with the grammatical errors and language, or if we pick up something.
I think if you pick up
okay.
something.
Then I'll say.
But other, I think, members, other grammatical errors, please feel free to forward it to Shoaib, Ines, or to Nola. To Nola, please. Feel forward to send it to her so that she can then engage with the other two colleagues. page one.
The second last line there, just the second last line, between on and 13, there should be a bigger space there. There's no space there.
On, that's the 19 to 21 June, that the one?
Sorry. So, second last line. The
oh, yeah, on 13 June, okay. Yeah. Okay. Space. Page two. So it's just back on page one. Looking at who the members were on this committee, and I couldn't find it anywhere in the report. On the report. Yeah. Oh, the members that were at the on the oversight there. You do? Nobody goes onto the report to say these were the members and that. The members. Yeah? Thank you. But how will a person read the ATC now? How will a person read the ATC and doesn't know who the members were oversight? I mean, no colleagues of all respect, most of the reports that I've done in my whole life in Parliament has put on the members of that company or that were part of the committee. Because it's not everybody that reads the ATC knows who's the members of the committee. So if you can put that in, please. Page two. Nothing. Page three. Honorable Pete.
Peterson, the... Okay, the second head, this, the heading with the bold, and the second one, where it states input by mayor, speaker, and official. Mm-hmm. Now, that paragraph for me is unclear. It seems as though the municipality did their own thing, and then afterwards, as an afterthought, they requested money. So I think maybe we should just indicate whether there was or was not an agreement. Because it just, the municipality decided to repair this and invested millions that it wanted DPW to pay back, 800,000. So I think if we could just indicate that, yeah, thanks.
Okay. The reason why it reads like this is because that was the actual dispute that continues until now to exist between DPW and the municipality. The municipality actually did go ahead without evidence of an agreement. I mean, we asked for the documentation, and I can tell you there is actually no documentation that shows that there was no agreement. Verbal agreement that existed for the service provider that they assumed was the CPL.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, I'm not going to dispute that I wasn't there, but because that's exactly what it reads. It reads as though they did their own thing, and then afterwards they asked for money with no agreement. Because I remember at the meeting, that's what we asked, submit the documentation, but as Shaev now says is that they didn't submit. So then if it is that, then there's nothing wrong with this, then it's fine.
Okay. Honorable
I think my colleague is incorrect. Remember, Chair, that we requested the documentation. Everything that they were saying, this and that, when we asked the documentation, there was nothing. And then we said they must forward all the documentation. I think this paragraph is correct to indicate that they put no documentation. It means that they voluntarily do it without any authorization. So because they were saying to us, we must assist them to get the money back. So we can't assist, as the colleague is saying, assist them to get the money back where there was no agreement. Because to us, they did not say it was a verbal agreement. They said there were documentation, but they never brought it. Thanks, Chair.
Chair,
I just wanted to say that some documentation was sent, but there was no evidence of such an agreement, which means it was a verbal agreement. So just indicating that there was documentation sent.
Okay. That is page 3, page 4. Honorable Madoka?
No, it's on 4, Chair.
On 4?
Yeah,
okay.
It's the second paragraph, the one talking about CPG.
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean that to say despite the agreement, they were going to pay that 800? Can I get the clarity? Just unpack this to me. What does it mean? After we have read the previous paragraph that we're talking about, the municipality decided to repair without any authority from the DPW. If you say the DPW stated that the DPW did not pay back the 800,000, and the mayor and the official were paid to. However, the DPW PMC was committed. What is this commitment about?
Yeah, the commitment was basically, if I understand it correctly, that the Deputy Director General Dyer governor was saying that they will assist the municipality in getting investors, part of the investors into the harbour, because they had this investors conference. Now I believe that the mayor was also invited to the investors conference that they had in Manus. So that was part of the commitment that he made there, is that they will then assist him in getting some investors and all that to invest on the harbour as such.
I'm trying to read this. However, the DPWPMC was committed to assist in getting growth commensurate to the construction investment that was made. It's something that was already done. Mm. What is that commitment? That's what I'm trying to check.
Okay.
Because that one that you said, Chair, I understand it. But now, above it, there is 800, you know? There is that 800,000 that was due. And there is a commitment on what was, you know, it's like, it's not a new thing going forward. So I want to understand this commitment, because when we send it to the parliament, we must really understand what is that commitment. We must be clear. Are they committing to give them half of what they did, or of what they paid, or they are committing to pay everything? We need a clarity there.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, I think I see the difficulty that Honourable Maglepa is facing. To assist with that, I would suggest, Chair, that we take the word getting out and put the word facilitate is much better, because getting seems to suggest that the municipality will get 800,000 rands worth of some type of growth. In other words, they're getting something in return. In other words, the DDG is sort of making an agreement there to say, even though we didn't give you the 800,000, you're going to get something to the worth of 800,000. So I'm suggesting, Chair, because we know that this municipality and business, private business from that area, all of them were involved in the investors' conference, and we know that the DDG actually meant that the facilitation of economic growth for such small municipalities close to harbours, he meant that there would be facilitation of economic growth, rather than an agreement that something commensurate to 800,000 would come to us. So I'm suggesting, Chair, we're taking getting out, put the words facilitate and economic in front of growth. So the verb and that adjective would then be more specific, Chair.
Honourable
Thank you, Chair. Chair, again, yes, I wasn't on the trip, so I don't have all the details, but now I'm struggling to get my head around what happened here. It's quite clear from one of the earlier pages that there was damage to the harbour surface caused by work that was undertaken by the Department of Public Works. The issue is that that harbour surface has now been repaired by the municipality. But Department of Public Works has said that they're going to facilitate some economic growth of some sorts to pay for this. Now, I'm just trying to put this in terms, in my own terms, so that I can understand it. So, for example, now what's happening is that my neighbor is fixing the wall between us in our residences, and while he's doing that, he damages my garden. Perhaps messes up one of my water pipes or something. So instead of him paying to fix that water pipe or the garden or whatever it is, he says no, he's going to phone my boss and ask him to give me an increase. When he phones my boss and asks him to give me an increase, my boss is going to tell him to go and take a hike. Surely the Department of Public Works must take some responsibility for the damage that their contractors did to the harbour surface. Understanding that, yes, perhaps the work was undertaken to repair it by the municipality without proper process and consultation, but I mean, the fact is the damage was caused by public works and the work that they were doing. For the municipality to suffer totally, and obviously if you read further into it, you can see that the livelihood of many of the local people, both formal and informal, depends on the good working of that harbour. Did the committee on the oversight have a look and see how necessary those repairs were? Was it just aesthetic or surface repairs, or was it to get the harbour back into working condition? And I'm just questioning, you know, how much responsibility should the department take? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Madrofa?
Yeah. Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think we did have a sympathy with them. And I think they were not honest to us, because they said they would bring the documents of the agreement and so on, because you can't just take that. There is a PFMA. Department of Public Works can't just take the money and give without a prior agreement with the municipality. The municipality, when there was something damaged, they were supposed to write to the Department of Public Works, give it to them, do the repair when they have got a response from them. So I don't think we can pin in. That's why there is that thing to say that, because there was this try to assist the municipality in their other development. Because according to PFMA, you can't just give the money, because it's not something like, you know, that we do to say I'm sympathetic. It's a law that is involved in doing this thing. So you can't just take the money. They promised to give us the documentation, and they are not giving us the documentation. If there were documentation, what we said to them, we said, when we got the documentation that is saying that you did liaise with them and approve everything, we will push Department of Public Works to pay for you. But without documentation, we can't be irresponsible as this committee, because we are doing oversight on them, how they spend their money, and so on and so forth. Thank you.
I can clearly remember we asked for the documentation, and the mayor and the municipal manager and the director from the municipality has given us a promise that we will get the documentation within, or Public Works got the documentation within 3 days or something. So what is the documentation?
The documentation, Chair, does not show evidence of anyone from DPW agreeing that this sewer plant resurfaces, that DPW is payback. There's no evidence to that effect. What we got was documentation about communication between DPW, regional office in Cape Town, and the municipality about the discussion around it. That's where the matter of the 50-50 and all of those things was raised. But I must say, Chair, that this committee's visit to the harbour as well as the municipality, the discussion that took place there, the DDG made one thing very clear, and the regional office manager also made it clear, that DPW is not going to pay a cent for that because they did not make an agreement. However, because there was no agreement, and that doesn't however mean that DPW does not care about development there, but that DPW would, because this municipality is part of the investors' conference, would ensure that there is investment to ensure economic growth. So that is what's gone by a team at all. That's what we reported on here. That's why the sentence in that paragraph, first sentence, Chair, reads, the DDG stated that DPW could not pay back the 800,000 that the mayor and officials referred to.
Honourable Ryder.
Chair, in that case then, perhaps that amendment on page 4 that was proposed, where it says was committed to assist in getting growth, and we can change getting to ensuring, because I think that to ensure is very different from facilitate.
Honourable Fink.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to get involved in whether they should or whether they shouldn't. I just want to get involved in the actual report and what should be accurate in the report. That's my view. So, in terms of whatever you want to change there, do that. Somewhere, somebody was economical with the truth. Because if you look at 2.2, it states exactly that there was an agreement. Shave now says there was no agreement. Chair, I remember yourself saying, if there's an agreement, these were the words, is that if there's an agreement, then they should pay the money. So 2.2.2 says there's no agreement. So if that is the case, and I have no reason to not believe Shave, then I agree that the 800,000 cannot be paid. That paragraph there, how you deal with that, another story. But I'm just interested in, for me, why I raised the issue was the report, the agreement. If there's an agreement, then sure, they must pay. That's all I have to say as far as that is concerned. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, thanks, Honourable Chair. It is true that we can't, as my colleague is saying, change anything, because what is written here is what they said. You know, when we're doing the oversight. But the municipalities, I think they were a little bit economically with the truth. Because they said there was an agreement. We were there. And now there's nothing that is an agreement. I don't know how we are going to, but I don't think it's a problem, that because now it must be reflected to say that there was no agreement. Yes, it must be reflected and tried to correct all these things to say there is an agreement and there is no agreement. But because there are no documentations of the agreement, because we pushed on that, we need a document of the agreement. So we, in the absence of the document of the agreement, it means to say that there was no agreement.
Marcella?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I don't know as whether it's really possible for the officials that to check with the department and the minister. The actual thing was in certain things, whether there was anything or not. Maybe if we can verify with them, then I should get to the end of the issue.
Manager came with an envelope and he wanted to give it to DPW, and the Honourable Fix told him, you can't do that, you must keep your documentation, and you requested them to CC it to this committee and to the department. You must just tell what is happening. They assume they had a contact. The department says no, there is. Let's just reflect that. Yes. Just what happened. None of our business whether there is a contract or not. That we must afterwards find out.
I support my colleague. You know, to go back, it was clear when we said. They said there is no argument. To us, it's not for us to go and police that. But because we requested an agreement with the municipality and the department, it was the fact that we wanted to assist the municipality to push Department of Public Works to pay back to the municipality. Failure for them to submit the relevant documentation that we requested.